We'll bring you the December 21 rain report in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. For the week beginning Friday, December 21, 2007, this is the rain report. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK. He's not a ham, but his writing in both the fiction and nonfiction fields have had a profound impact on telecommunications of the 21st century. He's also one of my personal heroes and role models. His name is Arthur C. Clarke, and he turned 90 on December 16th. As many of you will remember, back in the 1960s, he penned the science fiction novel 2001, A Space Odyssey. The story was later adapted to the big screen by director Stanley Kubrick, and won an Oscar in 1968 for its amazing special effects. But Arthur C. Clarke does more than write novels about man's future in space. He is considered a true visionary. As part of a 1992 teleconference, RadioNet, celebrating AMSAT and its contributions to space exploration, Arthur C. Clarke sat down and chatted by long-distance telephone with the late NBC Network News science correspondent Roy Neal, K6DUE.
Arthur, you're called the godfather of communication satellites. I wonder how and why that title was given to you.
Because I was tired of being called the father. And the men to whom that credit is due are John Pierce, who was at Bell Labs and was behind the Echo and Telstar programs, the pioneering early programs on communication satellites, and Harold Rosen at Hughes, who pioneered the first of the geostationary satellites on which today's system is based. And they sort of risked their necks and reputations, so they're the true fathers. So I prefer to call myself the godfather.
Well, doesn't it go back to a paper that you once wrote all the way back in 1945 for Wireless World, in which you projected what could be done with space and communication?
Yes, that was where the theoretical basis was laid down. And I'm happy you give me this opportunity of plugging my book on the subject, How the World Was Won. One's called O-N-E, which is all about the history of communications, and specifically, of course, the communication satellite.
I have a copy of that book in front of me right now, and I'm looking at page 163, in which you describe what you wrote so long ago.
It's hard to believe it was so long ago. It's only like yesterday.
Well, there, at that time, you were suggesting that, for example, rockets could be used to probe space, particularly the E1 and the F1 layers. Also, that an artificial satellite at the correct distance would make a revolution every 24 hours and remain thereby stationary above the same spot. Years ahead of your time, you were projecting essentially the kind of satellites that we are using right now to talk to one another.
That is true, but I should also make it clear that the basic ideas have been around for years. I mean, of course, the concept of artificial satellites is almost 100 years old. It's not very well known, but the chaplain of the Senate, the Reverend Edward Everett Hale, wrote a book called The Brick Moon, published more than 100 years ago, suggesting an artificial satellite for navigation, believe it or not. Of course, that was a fantasy. And then in this century, early in this century, people like Obert and Tsiolkovsky and Goddard, of course, put these concepts down and did some experimenting. And so the idea of artificial satellites is already around, and even the idea of a satellite in 24-hour orbit, which is, you know, it's quite obvious to from any knowledge of celestial mechanics that such a thing is possible. So those basic ideas were around. I just put them all together.
Yes, you put them all together back in the 40s when there were no solid-state electronics nor even computers. How could you conceive satellite communications as being practical when, in that era, all communication dealt with bulky, big equipment?
That's true, and at the time I was working on a very complex radar, the first ground-controlled approach line manning system, which had about a 1,000 valves, or tubes, as you call them. At least one we blow up every day, you see, so I couldn't imagine that sort of equipment operating without mechanics on the spot to change, to keep it service. So I assumed that these relay stations would be manned space stations, like the Freedom Station, which has been planned now at a much lower altitude. What I didn't anticipate was the incredible revolution in solid-state electronics, first the transistor and later the microchip. And I've sometimes said, not very seriously, that the invention of the transistor was a major catastrophe for astronautics, because if we hadn't invented the transistor, we would have had to build manned space station and we were halfway to Mars by now.
Arthur Clarke has always been in the forefront, pushing for communication. It must have been fascinating watching the dream unfold, and now I wonder, ComSats, as you see them, where are they headed? What new horizons can you project in this year of 1992?
Well, the big thing is coming rapidly and is already underway. It'll be pretty well completed by the turn of the century. Personal communication. The cellular telephone, which is still bulky, that's the beginning. The old Dick Tracy wristwatch telephone is almost upon us. That'll be here around, you know, within the decade. And I can see the time when everybody has a telephone, just as everybody has a wristwatch now.
Matter of fact, in your play, 2001, you projected all calls would even be local calls by the year 2000. No more long-distance charges. Is that really a projection, Arthur?
I think it's quite possible. And the analogy I draw is the old post office letter system. You know, we've forgotten this sort of thing now because it was more than 100 years ago. But at one time, if you wanted to send a letter, at least in England, the rate depended on how far you sent it. And the whole army of post office clerks or clerks had to calculate the cost of each letter. And, of course, it was incredibly tedious and expensive. And then a genius named Rowland Hill did what we call a cost analysis. And he realized that the cost of sending a letter was didn't depend on the distance. He said, let's make a flat rate. And he introduced the penny post. That caused an explosion in business and commerce and everything. And transform the whole situation. I think the same thing could very well happen with telecommunications.
As you've observed telecommunications over the years, I wonder what you know about amateur radio and its place in all of this.
Well, oddly enough, I was never a ham. I guess I couldn't afford the equipment. I played around with crystal sets, but that was listening to the old BBC. And the hams, the amateur radio people, of course, played a very important role in opening up the shortwave. And I'm delighted they're getting into space now with the amateur satellites. The only thing I'm a bit worried about, though, is the proliferation of satellites, first of all in low orbits, which are going to be a hazard through navigation. The pollution of space, both from the point of view of collisions and the point of view of noise. I'm thinking of the radio astronomers who may be put out of business by all these chattering satellites.
You're listening to a rebroadcast of a 1992 National Teleconference RadioNet interview with renowned writer and visionary Arthur C. Clarke. We'll conclude this interview conducted by the late NBC News science correspondent Roy Neal, K6DUE, in a moment. This is the Rain Report, heard Saturday evenings from the Rockies to the Eastern Seaboard on 160 meters via Vern Jackson, WA0RCR's Gateway 160-meter radio newsletter. Jackson transmits this service from Wentzville, Missouri, beginning at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, and for the balance of Saturday on 1860 kilohertz. We'll be right back.
As you probably know, ham radio is proposing actually a consolidation and a move into newer frontiers. They're proposing trying to match or even support or supersede the big boys with something that will be Phase 3D, which is a satellite being proposed by AMSAT here in the United States, one that would go into an extremely high Molniya or Russian-type orbit, you know, one of those big ellipses that goes way out and comes back. They see it as an inexpensive way to tie the world in with only one instead of three geosynchronous satellites, with about 16 hours on target, worldwide sharing, and using this then to pioneer microwave frequencies by using it as a repeater for ham radio operators that will move them into the microwave frequencies so valuable for space work. I wonder what you would think of a project like that one, Arthur.
Well, it's a very interesting project, and I can see its advantages. First of all, as you said, it'll be a single satellite, and though it doesn't give continuous service, it will give you a substantial fraction of the day, which will be very valuable. The Russians pioneered this concept for their early communication satellites, but they have now gone for the stationary ones. And it does open up, of course, to amateurs the whole band of frequencies, the microwave. So I certainly wish it luck.
Obviously, the hams, as always, are trying to pioneer something that perhaps will give the world something new. Microwave frequencies are not unknown to you, of course, are they?
Well, I was working on the first, I think, use of 3 centimeter, 10 gigahertz microwave with the ECA radar. We used that incredibly short wavelength, tiny little antennas, less than an inch long. First time I'd ever seen such a thing. That was with the Mark 1 GCA, which was invented by Louis Alvarez and his team from the radiation laboratory. I got to know Louis in his later years, and of course now he's famous, more famous for his theory of the extinction of the dinosaurs by this giant meteorite.
It's surprising you had mentioned 10 gigahertz, because that represents the upper frequency that would be used by this new ham satellite, the Phase 3D. And you mentioned the size of the antennas. Of course, that's one of the great benefits with a high-gain repeater, to being able to use tiny little antennas here on Earth to make communication, isn't it?
Just what is required for the wristwatch telephone.
A remarkable circumstance. Your latest book, by the way, How the World Was Won, O-N-E, had a great conclusion. Do you remember those words from Genesis and the way in which you wrapped it all up?
Yes, it does seem an odd coincidence. I have used this a number of times, the quotation. In Genesis, they had the building of the Tower of Babel, and at that time, according to the Bible, all mankind spoke one language. And then God saw them building this tower on the way to heaven, to the geosynchronous orbit, if you like, and said, I've got to stop this nonsense, and scrambled their communications and gave us all the different languages we have now. So historical, I think it's a lovely analogy. There's something very subtle about this in some ways, that we're undoing what happened at the Tower of Babel by going back, building a tower in the sky, and perhaps that may result in all mankind speaking, or at least understanding, one language, James.
As a matter of fact, to quote your own book, Arthur, you said on that first occasion, those words were a warning of disaster. Today, they should be a message of hope, a description of the future that lies within our grasp. Did you really mean that?
Yes, I certainly hope so, because what has happened, the communications revolution, this is what one of the themes of this book, by opening up the world to everybody, breaking in all frontiers, they've created a world which could not have been imagined even 10 years ago. Look at yesterday, Yeltsin speaking to the joint session of Congress. Could you imagine that happening? A standing ovation to the president of Russia, not the Soviet Union, in Washington. And that would not have been possible without the communications revolution.
And you there in Sri Lanka on the other side of the world were able to watch, listen, and share the occasion, weren't you?
Absolutely, through CNN, and which is shown here twice every night. We have about half an hour, but of course sooner or later we'll have continuous coverage.
Sometime soon, with luck, Arthur, we'll have you on ham radio, and we'll do the same interview on the new Phase 3D satellite. And if we ever do, I'm going to ask if there are any other final and important thoughts from Arthur C. Clarke on the whole business of commsats.
Well, it's very hard to anticipate really what will happen. Technological forecasting is possible. What you cannot forecast is the speed at which things happen. And also, you can never, however imaginative you are, conceive of the breakthroughs that occur. And in this particular field, the one breakthrough I never imagined was possible, and anybody did, was the fiber optics revolution. And that is really utterly unbelievable. They're talking of a cable across the Atlantic with no repeaters, sending light to a piece of glass, you know, several thousand kilometers thick, and getting something out the other side. Another revolution is starting now. But all these technologies help each other. They don't compete.
It would seem there's no end to it, right?
Well, maybe one day, but it's still a long, long way ahead.
Well, for the moment then, Arthur, I'm going to revert to pure ham radio, as I say, 73. And many thanks, my friend, for a delightful opportunity to share some of your thoughts about past, present, and future in communication.
Thank you, Roy. And there are some really keen amateurs here. I hope they'll get involved in this. And, of course, the Arthur Clarke Center is concerned very much with communications. And so when you've got your bird up, let us know, and I'll be very glad to talk to you again through it.
Well, we'll talk to you through the new satellite, then, and the Arthur C. Clarke Foundation. Meanwhile, thank you very much, and we've been talking with Arthur C. Clarke at his home in Colombo, Sri Lanka.
That interview was conducted back in 1992 and recorded at the Amateur Radio Newsline Studio in Los Angeles. Arthur C. Clarke was at his home in Colombo, Sri Lanka, and the late Roy Neal, K6DUE, was in High Point, North Carolina, literally half a world away. It's interesting to note how many of Arthur C. Clarke's predictions back then have since become the reality of today. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2007. Rain, all rights reserved. You are welcome to download this and any other Rain program you find on our growing archive section at therainreport.com for your personal use, and hopefully for transmission over your local VHF-UHF net. This week's program, courtesy of the Amateur Radio Newsline. Now for Rain's founder-producer, Hap Holly, KC9RP. I'm Byron Lee, KC9EEK, bidding you a very 73 and 44 from all of us at Rain, the Radio Amateur Information Network. www.therainreport.com